Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
And he was super buff, and he threw my legs over his shoulders, but then like lifted me up to his level with his face, and I hit my head on the ceiling.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, a podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams. And this week, we have Broadway star Jason Michael Snow on the podcast, who not only has been on television and one of the most famous Broadway musicals ever, but won That's a Gay Ass live show in September in LA. So we've got gay royalty here, queens, kings, themes, and tings. Speaking of That's a Gay Ass live show, can't say enough words about how perfect it was this past week. We sold out Chelsea Music Hall, the biggest venue we've ever done, the opening night of the New York Comedy Festival. And God, it was next level. If you want to watch the full thing, it is on Patreon at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And you just have to check out Bowen Yang's lip sync of Allison Janney from Drop Dead Gorgeous, the fucking hottest himbos doing full choreo and the new opening number. And the panelists just... Jessica Vosk, Bowen, Chris Murphy were so competitive. They gave me so much shit during the trivia round, especially with one question involving Timothée Chalamet and the Jimmy Awards. So if you want to watch that full video, it is on patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And it's only $5. $5 for that and bonus eps. But we're going to get into this episode of That's a Gay Ass Podcast with Jason Michael Snow. Yes, the Broadway show is he did the original cast of The Book of Mormon. He's been on television in Black Monday, Special, This Is Us, and more. And this episode is just a delight. Enjoy the episode. Tell your gay ass friends and your straight allies about That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Jason, I think I told you this in person, but I have seen you on Broadway in the original Broadway company of The Book of Mormon. I have seen you perform one of the most iconic Broadway masterpieces, and I've heard you sing, dare I say, on the Frozen movie soundtrack. Dare I say?
Yes, yes.
There's a couple other things I've seen you in that I will drop in a minute, but can you tell us, is there a story you tell people when you say, yeah, I was a part of one of the most famous Broadway productions, as to like how you got involved with it? Or was it pretty much like I auditioned and she booked?
The real story is sad and disheartening for a lot of musical theater hopefuls. We were all just asked by people who knew funny people to do a reading, and then Matt and Trey were loyal the whole time, and I never auditioned for The Book of Mormon. Neither did anybody else.
That's not sad. I think that's actually like a testament to like good people supporting good people.
Yeah, a Remus messaged me while I was on the national tour of Xanadu. And was just like, hey, because he and I used to send these really funny videos back and forth. I remember I introduced him to Scarlett Takes a Tumble when that came out.
Okay, Scarlett Takes a Tumble raised me.
Yeah,
together,
that's how far back this goes. Yeah.
Wait, well, how did she go to the beginning of that song?
We were young, I thought I knew it all.
Do we think Scarlett's doing okay today?
Oh, someone should reach out.
Honestly,
someone should check in.
A reunion concert of Scarlett Takes a Tumble is just that on repeat.
God, at this point, someone's got to orchestrate it. She should do Carnegie Hall.
I mean, listen, Laura Benanti broke her neck doing Into the Woods. Scarlett Takes a Tumble should be getting the career of Laura Benanti.
Wait, but I want a full, like, behind her as she's singing her anthemic song, like a Mia Michaels interpretive, you know, someone dancing, falling through a...
No, but they just have to keep falling onto the edge of the coffee table. Yeah. If there's anybody listening who hasn't seen Scarlett Takes a Tumble, this is your homework, and I might even put the link.
Oh my god! Anywhere, yes, yeah,
it's important. But anyways, so Facebook message. This is the days of Scarlett Takes a Tumble.
That led to we just would send funny viral YouTube videos to each other, and then eventually he just said, "Hey, when you're done with tour, I'm doing a reading. Wonder if you're available." And I was like, yeah, sure, I'm totally available. I just booked my first Broadway show and I should be available that week because I left Xanadu to do South Pacific on
what?
Yeah. And then the week I opened South Pacific and my mom and my stepdad were in town. We were walking through Hell's Kitchen. I got a call from my agent. Hey, you're doing the reading of the new Matt and Trey musical, Book of Mormon, and it starts next week. And it was the day that I was making my Broadway debut that I got that call. And it was just a reading. It was like cute. And then
I think I am a little angry. Just a kind of that's kind of infuriating how amazing that is.
But the gag was when Casey Nicholaw came in, he had a session where we all came in and he just tried some choreography on us. And most of us just fell on the floor, hurt ourselves, ran into each other. And we all laugh about the fact that if we had to audition, none of us would have booked that show.
None. But then how were you able to actually do the inevitable difficult Broadway tap choreog?
You just sell it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Face, arms, yeah. arms.
Yeah, exactly. If you're looking up here, you're not looking down here.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I told you this at the show, but or maybe I did. I was 23 and they were looking for a replacement for Rory O'Malley. And I got a call back and I had so much inexperience, so little experience, one might say.
Sure.
And did not sleep the night before. Probably didn't even prepare the way that a smart person would have. I went in there and just bombed it, just did an awful, awful job and was never asked to be back in the Book of Mormon sphere. But I think that in some
way, it worked out. It worked out
because look at me now.
You're crushing it.
I'm talking to you. And that honestly, if anything took me to staring at Jason Michael Snow's stunning skin. And by the way,
listen. Look at your cute little coiffed beard. I like this art, this sexual art behind you.
Okay, do you want to know there is sexual art behind me? That Sedgwick, really hot guy, does this art, and yeah. My husband is kind of living into his slutty dreams of like putting a pencil drawing of a naked man in our home, and so he bought this online, puts it up, and I realize when I do therapy now.
Yeah.
What is my therapist staring at?
Yeah, he's staring at a cute butt and a jockstrap.
I mean, yeah, and like the jockstrap, you can literally see cock outline.
And then your therapist is like, tell me more about Fire Island.
You know what's funny is that I would talk to her about fuckery, mm-hmm. but I kind of find that in my station of life, my traumas are not too much about
Sex,
which is actually kind of amazing, right?
Yeah. What are your traumas?
My traumas are about the critics in my head that are telling me that I am a piece of shit who is also, if I do anything vulnerable, I'm not safe. Wow, that got dark and real, but that's exactly
I had that session
this morning. I mean, I am literally days off of the last show in New York, and it was, I literally lost weight the week before the show because my stomach would not allow it to keep food inside of it because it was saying, yep, like, you're not safe and you should
and
be
and you're gonna fail
out.
And it's gonna be bad and
it's
no gonna one's
be bad.
Gonna think it's funny,
exactly. And ugh. Then but my brain, the thing that's so frustrating is my brain knows that it's okay. That's the thing, is
correct.
Like my brain is coming around. It's like, Eric, no matter what, let's say Bowen Yang has to go to a SNL thing and he has to pull out of the show, you are gonna get someone else to do the show and it's still going to be a great night. I'm like, if whatever happens, it's still going to be good. But my body was like, do you want to go have diarrhea?
Yep. Correct. Literally, I just got back from the gym. And as I was leaving to go to the gym, I told my partner, I was like, I'm probably never going to be a writer. Everything's going to be complete failure for me. I'm going to go to the gym because I'm having these horrible dark feelings and I'm going to run extra long today just to kind of like purge it. And do you want to know what I listened to when I ran today?
Barbara Streisand's new book.
No, you and Zach Noe Towers.
somehow just as gay as Barbara Streisand. Wait, correct. was it on Good Morning Sodomites, or That's a Gay Ass Podcast?
That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
Oh my God.
She was doing prep work.
She was researching. She was researching.
She left a review.
Okay, everybody take notes of JMS Pinafore. take three. Take notes on JMS Pinafore on Instagram. What is your Instagram handle? Why is that? What is that?
Okay, we were.
Is it because
of,
wait, don't can yeah. I guess really fast? Because I'm just realizing the second I asked it, I was like, wait, is that a Gilbert and Sullivan reference?
Yeah, but I don't even know what that show is, but it is a Gilbert and Sullivan reference.
Because the show is HMS Pinafore?
Correct.
And you are Jason Michael Snow, JMS. Wow, so it's even faggier than I could have imagined.
100%. And the biggest gag is someone at some point at a stage door in Book of Mormon came and started singing something from that to me. And they were like, that's your Instagram, right? Don't you love that? I was like, oh, no, I don't know that at all.
Sweetie, no, I just put
sorry,
it for...
Sorry, honey.
Sorry, honey.
I just thought the pun was funny. I don't know Gilbert and Sullivan, and I won't.
You're doing Karen Walker in the Broadway company of Book of Mormon.
honey. This is Drew Drogi does Karen Walker.
Oh, God. That would pay front row. Oh. Drew Drogi's after Chloe Sevigny is just Karen Walker send-ups. Were all the Book of Mormon boys fucking?
So we were 50-50 straight and gay in the cast.
Oy.
Legit.
Oy.
I know. Without spilling too much tea, the gays were not being irresponsible.
The straights were...
I cannot speak to.
You know what you're telling me right now that I'm going to project is that the straights were blowing up marriages.
I shan't comment any further.
God, I love being smart. I love being good. And I love being right. You know what? There is not a more chaotic profession for relationships than musical theater. The amount of 100%. Relationships I've seen crumble from people being on tour or Broadway or whatever it is, or fucking summer stock because they're having a showmance. Showmances break the bonds of government contracts.
I learned very early on, I had a showmance on the tour of Xanadu that went so south and so horrible that
Jason,
I was like, I shall never, well, but I mean, you know, you're 24 years old and it's cute and it's fun. And you just are like, okay, I shan't do this at work again.
Did it go south because you were like a quarter into the tour and you guys ended
We were hooking up. It was great. I had license in that show to improvise. I did a certain improvisation that person did not find funny, and they went to stage management and had me written up.
Was this while you were hooking up or after you stopped hooking up?
While.
Who the fuck is this troll?
And I went to their dressing room, and I threw the door open, and I was like, listen, it's funny because, and I spelled out exactly why it was funny. And he was like, Jason, listen, when you become a professional someday, you'll know that there's a thing called freezing a show. And I said, well, listen, when you do a comedy, you'll understand that there's a thing called timing and keeping it fresh. And Dance of the Vampires doesn't count. And then we didn't talk for 5 months.
Naturally. And that's the natural next progression. You don't talk for the next half of a calendar year.
Yep.
Wait, since Xanadu was one of the things that I would listen to religiously, what was your track?
What track were you?
Curtis Holbrook did the Thalia, the Muse of Comedy. We did an off-Broadway show together called Saved at Playwrights Horizons. And he said, they're going to do the tour of Xanadu. I think you'd be great. I want to coach you. And he did. And we're still like good friends to this day. I love, love, love Curtis. And basically, he helped me get the job. And I was the Muse of Comedy and did that for 9 months on the road.
Wow. Was that with Max von Essen?
Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth Stanley.
Oh, see, this is like, you're catching me.
Goddess.
You're catching me at like, I think it's probably why it's surreal that I know you now is because my chapter in life of like Broadway faggy fandom was when you were like, these shows you were doing was like, I did the standby line to see Book of Mormon. I stood in the back to watch the original cast and I felt like I was witnessing, I mean, I was like witnessing her story. And like, it's like, here we are. Like, here we are.
That's fine.
Jason Snow, look, here we are.
We're two living, breathing, anxiety ridden homosexual men.
And ain't that the truth? And because we both have this shared anxiety experience, I am curious about your answer for the famous podcast question. Jason Michael Snow, tell me, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
You know, I think we can blame two people. We can, first of all, blame Sylvester Stallone.
Mm.
My father loved action movies and would watch them on TV. And I was terrible about staying in my room when I was supposed to be like taking a nap. And I would sneak to the, you know, corner and like peer over and mm-hmm. watch whatever movie my parents were watching, whatever. I have a very visceral memory of peeking around the corner, seeing Sylvester Stallone, like bulky, oiled up 1980s sex, you know, mullet, shooting something, I don't know. And me, just as a tiny child, going, oh.
Oh, nipples, please.
Oh. And that's now my current demographic for every app I'm on.
Sylvester Stallone, oiled up daddy.
Bingo. Bingo. Yes, correct. And so that was the awakening. And then Clue was on TV all the time. And I saw myself in Leslie Ann Warren so deeply. Deeply.
I saw myself in Leslie Ann Warren. That is merch.
I mean, I remember getting grounded so hardcore. My mom was putting my snowsuit on me and she's, you know, like buttoning everything. And I fully went, get your mitts off me. And she goes, Jason's now getting around right now. I was in so much trouble.
Wait, how old were you when that happened? Oh,
Get your mitts. And I sold it.
Oh, I know you sold it.
Sweetie, you know what I mean? Like, sweetie, I was angry.
Sweetie. I have a five-year-old nephew who just sent us a video of him sending a message to the family chat about how excited he is for my brother's wedding. And he goes, we're so excited to go to the wedding. And we love you so much. And I said, sweetie, that's a performer. And has it. And that is Leslie Ann Warren reincarnated. Yeah, and that is... Yeah. So you are sexually gay because of Sylvester Stallone, culturally gay because of Clue, and I think Bingo. That sort of gives us the JMS pinafore who has great taste and is horny AF.
Yeah, that actually I've never thought of it that way. That is all sides of my prism. That's all you need to know.
Does the Sylvester Stallone type in the apps today, does it, I have to ask this because it's in my contract with God, is it body hair centric? I don't remember if Sylvester Stallone has much.
He doesn't have any, but I tend to drift toward the ones that do.
Okay, because your mm-hmm. husband does.
Yeah.
And your husband, yeah. You are both quite hot together, so I want to make sure that is known on this podcast.
He was a diver in college and then a circ guy when I first met him. I went and watched him do a competition in Vegas on rope.
You're kidding.
It was really hot.
How did you meet him backstage at the...
We met on Scruff.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. He was at his writing partner's house, which was just a few blocks down the street from where I first lived here in LA.
How many years ago was this?
7.
Wow. Yeah. Vintage Scruff, 7 Vintage years Scruff, ago. Honey. So yeah. that there's so much to unpack in this the story, because if we paint the picture of where you're rounding the corner to watch Sylvester, what US state are we in?
We're in Boise, Idaho.
Okay, so this is already giving us a clearer picture of your mom being upset by, you know, you get your mitts off me. Because Boise, Idaho, are we talking, you're coming from repressed Catholic?
Catholic. All the neighbors were Mormon.
Oh, wow.
All of them. LDS. My mom learned the best canning recipes from all the Mormon moms around the neighborhood.
God, what to be a canned mom in Idaho.
I mean, and then my dad coached the Boise State Broncos football team.
Are you kidding?
So that was... Yeah, he was drafted by the New York Giants for a hot second. Then when I came along, was a coach for college football. And so we were like in Seattle with the Huskies for a while. Then we were in Boise with the Broncos. Then the divorce happened. And then Spokane, Washington, here I come. And that's where I stayed.
So you are the literal gay Broadway tap dancing flapjacking son of a football star coach.
Bingo. And an AP biology teaching mother.
Well, that I mean, confirms you're gay, because any female teacher who has a child is running the risk of...
Correct.
Teacher's pet.
Yeah.
What age did your parents get divorced? How old were you?
4 or 5.
Okay, so pretty early. So then is your father's athleticism, did that play a role in any of your... I'm trying to gauge where, because I know where my anxiety is coming from. Where do we think your like I'm not good enough. Whose voice is that, as my therapist might say? And what's is it coming from that?
The voice is when I applied to colleges, I applied to all the state schools and then my one Hail Mary, which was the Boston Conservatory. I didn't apply to any other dramatic arts anythings.
Yeah.
And when I got accepted at BoCo, my stepdad, my dad, and my stepmom, the three of them, all basically said, you know, the statistics of making it in acting is really low. They gave me all the numbers. My stepdad was like, you got to have a backup plan. I don't think this is a good college because you can't do any other majors. And what are you going to do when you don't make it? So there were just lots of like, it was the ultimate pragmatism that they thought was helpful that now follows me everywhere. And my mom was the one voice that said, run, go. I will support you. Run to Boston. Don't look back. We'll figure it out.
You are taking me back to so many conversations about the pressure that is put on a 17-year-old child applying to schools and then saying, because I have a friend that is an amazing person but when I told her that I was deciding between NYU and Syracuse, and I was like, I'm going to go to NYU. I'm going to do it. I'm coming from St. Louis, Missouri. I had barely been to New York. And I was like, I'm going to go move to New York and do it. And she was like, are you sure? Like, are you sure you want to move to New York City? And I remember looking at her and being like, I actually know where this is coming from. The like comfort of our Midwest lives. It's coming from like our school telling us what professions bring you success and stability. So I have zero judgment or qualms from her saying that, but I did remember feeling in my tummy, I was like, no, this is where I need to go to like take the chance that I feel like I need. And
yes,
for you to be told that, well, you're not gonna succeed.
Oh yeah.
You need a backup plan, and this conservatory will not give you that. I mean, I literally did not apply to certain conservatories because my parents said those same things.
And they don't, I think, you know, no parent means to be discouraging to a dream, but I think when you're in these small towns, you know, Spokane's, I think at the time was like 100,000 people. It was not big.
Yeah.
And when, at least in Spokane, the biggest aspiration is to go to Seattle. If you go to Seattle, you've made it.
The big city.
You know, the big city. So going to New York is like Mars. You know, that's not even a concept to anybody. So when you have a 17-year-old, everyone's just looking out for this kiddo and just saying, oh my God, don't, you know, walk before you can run.
Right.
And then if you've got that one person, I will say that as soon as I could, because Lincoln Center would not let me thank anybody in my bio. They were like, no editorializing. And they were very angry about it. But in Book of Mormon, you know, you could write whatever you wanted. So I thanked the three women that are the reason I was on that stage. My high school drama teacher, who's still one of my best friends. My mom and my college voice teacher. Those three women are the reason I have gotten anywhere in life.
And any chance we have on this podcast to give the women who championed us, give them their flowers, we give them their flowers, because these women are our safe spaces, our encouragers, and our soldiers that are like the people that we needed. And God, I don't even know these women in your life, and I love them, and I do know them.
Oh,
I do know them.
They're fabulous. Yeah. I think, you know, especially gay men, we identify, I think, a lot. You know, I think we all have this conversation of why, you know, why do gay men identify with strong women characters so much? And it's like, because there's a sense of sameness. There's a sense of I project, but also see myself in your struggle. I understand to a point the struggle you have, because I have a similar, I'm walking a similar path, and
right.
I've seen you rise above it, and I want to rise above it.
Exactly. And part of that path, I think, is by a lot of straight men who treat you like you don't deserve the same, you don't have the same value, or that you're not as capable, or that, especially for gay men, because you aren't as masculine, that means that you are less than, etc. And I think that's why I almost feel like when I hear about your dad's work, it's kind of poetry to me that you turned out to be the way you are, because it really is like you were meant to be this person. Like,
I also love the idea that my dad at 23 and I at 23 walked the same streets.
Oh, wow.
Because he was drafted by the Giants. So he was in New York at 23 and 24, and so was I. And I'm like, there's some kind of similarity and like there's something there.
Like that, the hero's journey between the two of you has like a similar arc.
But it's also, there's some kind of like fun hominess about it too.
Oh.
You know? Telephone wire. Like it's...
Oh God. I mean, we haven't unpacked too much of gays and their dads on this podcast because maybe it's not as fun, but I feel...
Well, listen, that being said, I love a daddy type and let's talk about sex.
Let's talk about sex. And by the way, the amount... So we were just in Palm Springs for Palm Springs Pride. I flew from New York at 7:30 in the morning after the show to Palm Springs to do like 2.5 days of Pride. And I don't know if I'll ever go back for Pride just because it was like Times Square.
Was it crazy?
Yeah. Like we went to the where the gay bars were and no joke, Matt, we were with a friend. We met up with a friend. Matt turns to me and he goes, cover your pockets. Like there's some, you know, stuff happening. And I'm not joking. Within 30 seconds, our friend goes, I think I dropped my wallet. No, babe.
Nope.
Your crossbody satchel was unzipped and someone took your wallet out of that. All this to say, I did lay by a pool in a Speedo. I did smoke weed. Ugh. I did go to the parade and then go into our new friend's store who had a gaggle of hot gays. And I met a daddy in there. Oh my God, this is such a good story. Let me just tell you this.
Yes.
This is one of the first times on this podcast I'm telling a story about me on Scruff because none of the other stories felt interesting enough to tell. But listen to this. I'm in this store of a friend of mine in Palm Springs. I meet their friends. There's these two guys in particular. They're a married couple. One is giving exactly what we want. Salt and pep, beard, floral button down where we see chest hair poking out. He probably has an icy blue eye if my fantasy is correct.
Hard Gaston energy.
Very hard. And I'll say very hard. Yes. Then his husband is a little younger, a little more Sean Cody, but still has the bit of the beard. Great style. Just both hot. I flirt with them relentlessly. The one daddy says, find me on Instagram so we can connect. I said, oh, I'll find you.
Oh,
find
him. Found.
Lost and found. I find him. I go back to the pool, smoking my weed. I get a Scruff notification. And the message says, great to meet you in person. I say, what are you talking about? 9 days prior to this, I was in San Francisco for work. And I had had an entire conversation with the hot husband of the daddy 9 days before meeting him in Palm Springs at Pride.
And then the ending was
that we all had to go back to our respective homes the next morning, but there will be a to be continued.
Oh God, I love the blue ballingness of that,
isn't it? Yeah, because sometimes the most fun of all this is just the ride, if you will.
Yeah,
and I will.
The journey. The hero's journey.
Wow, and that's the hero's journey. So in terms of the hero's journey, I know we've talked a little bit about you and your stunning, do I say partner or husband or what?
Partner's fine. There's been no rings, but we've talked about what are we doing for the rest of our lives. Okay, we're doing this. Great.
Oh, we love. Okay, so husband in practice, partner by law. And you are someone that does still utilize the apps on your mobile device.
I do, yes.
And when you find yourself on these mobile apps and you go for these father figures, a lot of people ask when it comes to arrangements in relationships, is it something that you tend to do just one-on-one, or is it usually only with your man, or what's that rule, if you don't mind me asking?
No, not at all. We more often than not are separate.
Uh-huh.
But that's only because it's weird. Like my dating taste doesn't run the same as my fantasy taste.
Of course.
Right. So Daniel's my, you know, life partner dating, like he kind of checks tons of boxes, but then when you want to go for the fantasy, you're like, I don't need you to check as many.
Of course.
And so his go-to is a genre that is not necessarily my go-to. His go-to, we might find in Williamsburg, or you know, with a plaid button down that is buttoned all the way up with no tie.
Oh, and if he wears a tie, it's cardboard.
Bingo! Yes, and they're skinny but definitely scruffy.
Wait, are you describing me with better style? You're describing me, but if it's
TBH,
if I,
yes. Yeah, my partner would be so into you. Did you meet him in Palm Springs?
Mine is,
you know, I need you to be twice my height and twice my size, and we're good to go.
And age.
Yeah. Double everything about me, and let's
wait. But Jason, you're not short.
I know. I wanna climb that fucking tree, baby.
What's the top? If you could name for me like a gorgeous fantasy height right now, what's the number?
I hooked up with a guy in Chicago once, and he was 6'5", and he was super buff, and he threw my legs over his shoulders, but then like lifted me up to his like level of his face, and I hit my head on the ceiling.
he's only used to pulling up 5'4". Ugh,
this is it.
Pocket gaze.
Yeah.
And you're how tall are you?
5'11". So, you know what I mean?
I'm picturing two Space Jam basketball cartoon players fucking.
We need an airplane hangar to make it work. It's just everything's too short.
The ceilings aren't tall enough in Chicago. That is a gorgeous visual. Was your kepi okay? Your head?
I'm sure it was. was the least of my worries.
Was he trying to like eat your beehole from standing?
Yes, he was.
Okay, yes, talk about Cirque du Soleil. Jesus Christ.
Cirque du Soleil, gay, honey.
Honey, and don't get it twisted. So when people ask, I feel like a lot of the questions I get from, because I know a lot of listeners of this pod are either girlies who don't have as much experience or gays who are curious about what a really healthy, communicative, relation is. Do you always tell Daniel all the deets, or is it kind of like you just only do it if it comes up?
So beforehand, we do a communication conversation about the person. We see the pictures, we talk about it, we kind of talk about what the, not necessarily specifics, but we talk about what's the vibe, you know, is the vibe. Because sometimes I'm not feeling like I want to run into the shower and fully prepare for every single thing that could happen.
Right.
She's 40, and sometimes we just don't want to get railed.
No.
And so we have long conversations like, you know, what's the vibe been like? And sometimes it's, no, I just kind of want to, you know, watch TV and like, yeah, fool around, whatever. And so we do that, and check in with each other kind of emotionally, like, how are you doing today? Like, and we both kind of reserve the right to say, I'm feeling a little vulnerable or I'm feeling a little disconnected. Can we just kind of chat or be with each other for a bit? And then maybe it'll pass, or maybe I'll still feel insecure. And not several times, but we have both have had times where we've said, I'm actually not really feeling it. Do you mind? Is that okay? And the other one's always been like, yeah, totally. It's
like, do you mind totally not hooking up with them? Cause I'd rather.
Yeah. I'm just kind of feeling some sort of way, or like, I just had really awful news and I haven't gotten a chance to even tell you about it yet. And so we make a lot of space for each other. And then when it happens and we come back, I am a little bit more, you can tell me everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a little bit more, I need to marinate for a second. And then tomorrow you can tell me everything.
Mm. It's so nice though, to like be able to respect each other's differences. And I think that there's a fear from either straight people or couples who think it's just all super irresponsible, that there's just like, we're just gonna go fuck and see what happens to my relationship. And it's like, no, there's an emotional intelligence that I think that it's almost like a really beautiful testament to queer people forging their own paths in ways that are responsible and full of love and positivity. And like, sex is excellent, and it's like, hello, why can't we move through life honoring our partner and fucking other things?
I mean, don't you think, because I'm assuming you guys are open too? Yes.
Yeah, we basically 8 years of our relationship we were not, and then the past 2 years we've been exploring the non-monog.
I love. Yeah. Well, so
it's been great. It's been excellent.
Do you find in your dalliances and journeys, I hook up with someone, and then there's, you know, always the inevitable pillow talk or something, you know, when you're putting your clothes back on, you can't get out the door fast enough. I have that I constantly have that moment of confirmation of, God, you're boring. Like, I can't wait to get back to my partner and, like, not necessarily laugh about this, but I can't wait to get back to the person who makes me laugh more than anybody else.
Yeah, and the person that, like, you're, like, so just, like, safe and...
Yeah, that I make dinner with and we watch the same trash TV and we both love our dogs so thoroughly.
Well, that's
and,
the thing is, you never... It's you're never just like, well, I wish I could stay with you and this person I just had sex with. And it's like, there's never that. I mean...
No.
It's funny because I think there's something also about being a gay man that is really freeing to me is that I have hooked up with one person who we had actually like a lovely conversation. Like usually I want to get the, I'm donezo, get me out.
Yeah, same.
But this one guy, like we just had such a great conversation. And I, of course, was like told Matt all about it. But I think like I've introduced him to other friends of mine and like,
cute.
And I think that there's like actually... when it can become a friendship that transcends that one moment, that's actually another mm-hmm. example of like specialness, but it also, mm-hmm. again, doesn't get in the way of your relation. So I think it's like, it's at the end of the day, it's so different from what we were told was okay growing up. I mean, I can only imagine in Boise that there's only the straight relish and then you have your children.
Oh, yeah.
And then if any mention of a key party is...
Did you ever see that show on HBO that with the drag queens, We're Here?
Of course.
So one of the episodes, I think in season one, is Boise.
Mm.
And I watched it just because, I mean, I haven't lived there, you know, since I was a toddler or, you know, a kindergartner. But I watched it because I had gone back and visited a couple times because my friends from, you know, I knew some friends there. And I watched that episode and I was like, yeah, I forgot. This is bleak. This place is tough. And so many queer boys and girls and non-binary folk come from these tiny, tiny hole in the wall places. And it's just such a, I love, well, I mean, look, let me just butter you up a bit. I love things like this. I love these kinds of podcasts. I love these kinds of TV shows that show that there is a community, that there is something larger, that you can like get the hell out and find your brothers and sisters that you did not actually grow up with.
Yes.
You find your other brothers and sisters and you create a family and it is so worth it.
I completely agree. And I had an experience that, again, to talk about these critics we have in our heads and the tough things we say to each other, it makes it even more meaningful when like when you say something like that to me, I can like really take that in and I really appreciate that because my therapist actually lives in New Jersey. She's can practice in California and New York, and I have loved her so much. And
you're so lucky.
And she told me when I do my show in New York, she's going to come to the show if that's okay with me. I was like, of course it's okay. She comes to the show on Friday, and she brings her 19 or 20 year old daughter, and her daughter, I think, lives a life in New Jersey that is very much, you know, it's still, I think, somewhat sheltered is what my therapist said. And what she told me is that she saw this show and she could not stop saying how lit the show was and that she did know that things like that existed. And she couldn't believe how free people in the audience felt to be so silly. And just like she had never experienced anything like that. And it opened her eyes to like what could be. And my therapist told me that like what she found is magical about the show and the podcast is that it gives people the feeling of like ability to get out of their own way and just be, you know, stupid and queer,
yeah,
and whatever the fuck it is. And like that is by far the nicest compliment, because like I think when you're a perfectionist or whatever, you get lost in the sauce of, am I singing this well? Is that joke written well enough?
Yeah,
is,
did I hit all the right beat? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you go to the script of it.
Exactly. And then you zoom out and like to be able to actually live in that idea of showing people that not only can you transcend the bogus rules we were given, but you can actually create probably a more fulfilling life after you've dealt with the feelings those rules gave you.
Well, isn't it shocking? And I mean, it's just so ironically dumb to just realize that the answer to everything is communication in all of its forms.
Yeah, it's tough.
And you're like, What a simple fucking response of like, yeah, the ease of which any couple in any way they want to have a conversation with their partners about sexual fulfillment is just talking about it.
Yeah. And I think also, whatever your flavor of trauma, I think Catholics have no talking, no communication is the stereotype. My stereotype of Jews is over communication or just like, mm-hmm. I don't know what the fuck you would call it, but just like boundaryless, you know, mess. And so I think like meeting in the middle is the way.
Yeah.
But I do need to ask you the next podcast question, Jason Michael Snow.
Sure.
If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Thank you, Mr. Ed. Cher as a horse. When I read this in your email brief, I had an immediate answer. Then I second guessed it, and then I said, no, I shan't do that. Catherine Hahn.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Done.
I love that you trusted your gut, Jason. It's important to do that. And can you tell me when your mind goes to Catherine Hahn, what's the entree or the role that you envisage?
Oh, Win a Date with Tad Hamilton, no doubt. Because she had that stupid bartendress role and it was a nothing part. And has this, you know, she's just given advice to that guy from That 70s Show. I always forget his name. Topher Grace.
Yeah.
She's given him all this advice. It's, you know, she's like his therapist at the bar over and over. And then at the end, she has this beautiful four-line monologue where she says something like, you know, go after her and tell her how you feel because that's what I wish I would have done or something. And she looks right at him. And then he realizes she's in love with them. And you're like, Catherine Hahn, how are you so funny and so heartbreaking?
That is, I think, the perfect encapsulation of our character actresses that we think deserve to live is that they have such humanity with their cuntiness, with their heartfeltedness, with and Catherine is such a good example. And by the way, I'm afraid to tell you if I've seen this movie, it was enough long ago that I don't think I remember an ounce of it.
I've only seen it once.
Okay.
Literally. Well, I've only seen it once. And for some reason, this particular performance, I clocked and I have never forgotten her name or her since that moment.
Well, I'm not joking. I Googled Catherine Hahn in this movie and she has not only crimped hair behind this bar, but there's also a look of her. And this is, I think, something I've never unpacked what turned me gay. But what turned me gay is the hairstyle that women could do where they would zigzag a line in the top of their hair with their end of their hairbrush and then it would cascade down. And Catherine Hahn has this hair in that movie as well. And I would say it's a 1-2 punch.
Yes. The Jodie Swenson of it all.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's something so magical about a zigzag hair part.
And she's also giving you full Melissa Etheridge, Paula Cole, Lilith Fair vibes. It's
she's wearing in one of these, in that screen grab, she's wearing an open button-down shirt that's sort of plaidy with an orange cami under it. A cami. Remember watching your girlfriends in middle and high school either like have their Sophie shorts or their camis and just thinking, I wish I could wear a camisole.
I remember in college, a girlfriend taking me to, it was Filene's Basement. Do you remember Filene's Basement?
Of course.
Like the old school Goodwill and on the East Coast only. And I remember telling her, I want to look like Avril Lavigne. And we went on a full, we went on a full shopping spree.
Who's your style inspo? Avril Lavigne.
Avril Lavigne. I mean, we're talking the deep, like, boot cut jeans, the black, the white, the pink. And I remember going out in the Back Bay that night and just thinking, I'm just going to get so much attention. And
I
think
look.
I put eyeliner, just eyeliner, and not a single look, just kind of a, okay, that person's here, another weirdo.
Another weirdo. Smudgy eyeliner and a yellow and black plaid shirt.
God, I look like I was just a member of the craft.
But listen, we were trying to find our way. And when I was trying to find my way, Avril Lavigne's I'm With You, I would just cry and sing to that song, thinking about the things that I didn't have and the things that I wanted and the hopes that I thought would never come true. I'm with you. It's so...
Oh, yeah.
Avril gets it.
I kid you not, when in college they make you sing these pop songs, and like, you have to identify with them emotionally. I remember in the practice room going through all these different ones, and I brought up I'm With You, and when I got to the part, she says something like, I'm standing on a bridge, I thought that you'd be here by now. And when I got to I thought that you'd be here by now, I thought of this like guy that totally just ghosted and broke up with me, and I burst into tears. And my like scene partner that I was doing the practice session with was like, you should sing this song. And I was like, I can't, it's too hard.
Sometimes
I end up singing some. I think I end up singing "Wake Me Up Before You Go Go" instead.
Wake me up before you go. That's. I think that's much more emotionally centered.
What a safe choice.
I love how dramatic theater people are, and by that I mean I can't stand it most of the time.
1,000%.
But you, you transcend. This is what's so magical about you. You have the encyclopedic knowledge, you have the talent, you have the wit, but you're also not annoying.
I mean, honestly, because I thank you, first of all, it's very kind. I think most of my dressing roommates would beg to differ, but I think it's only because and it's always back to college, I lived with all straight men. And they would go, and I would like skip class. And you know, like when most musical theater people skip class, it's like, I don't know what the hell normal people do. I would skip class and go to Red Sox games.
What?
With my straight roommates. Because I liked them and they were fun. And I didn't mind baseball. And I just had this sense of like going to baseball games and watching real deep idiotic straight people acting a fool and just getting this kind of sense of, oh my God, everyone's a nightmare.
Yes.
Every single person's a nightmare, especially theater people.
And you know, that is a bit of a freeing thought, I think, is in every pocket of humanity are the most obnoxious people you've ever met. Yes. And yes, theater people are an advanced form of that species, but I do think like the awareness is the first step.
Yeah, and I think the sports like comparison is the exact other side of the intensity of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
People are screaming their heads off when you're like in a recital hitting a high note. And they're like, "Yes, Queen! Oh my God, F sharp!" And then they're also screaming their heads off when someone hits a grand slam, and you're like, "Sir, sit down. It's just a grand slam. Relax.
Relax. I am not joking. This is said with love, but someone in the show in New York after the show, I said, "What?" to someone, and he goes, "That was a B." I was like, I forgot that people label the pitches. I forgot that people label the pitches.
Oh no. And that was unacceptable, sir.
No.
Is what that was. And his initials are Bowen Yang.
BY. No, can you imagine Bowen Yang?
That was a B, bitch. What if Bowen Yang also had perfect pitch on top of everything else?
Honestly, he probably fucking does. Oh, my friends when I went to Palm Springs were like, asking about the show and like, how is Bowen Yang actually like? And I was like, he is like, could not be kinder. Or it's like one of those people that I think
that's
like,
great.
I think it's one of those people that, you know, it's like stars in Hollywood who are just like, no one has a mean word to say about them because they're like stupidly talented and quite down to earth and nice. And I think Bowen is like going to be one of those like in the history books that's just like beyond lovely. And
you would
never know like that he had just gotten off a fucking marathon of SNL the last week and on his off weekend was doing Chelsea Music Hall.
The gayest game show.
The gayest game show of gaggery. God, I want to make sure I have everything in this app because there's so much about Jason Michael Snow. Years ago, there was a friend of yours who had a birthday party in Palm Springs, and this is Jesse Vargas, and this is where Trish was born. Now, Trish, you've posted about, and remember, I do my research, Jason. This is not just a gay guy talking into a mic. She knows this is serious business.
What?
This is a wig that's giving Carrie Bradshaw
100%
in the white skirt when the bus splashes water. Trish, who is Trish, Jason?
So the wig, first of all, was purchased when I did a duo costume for Halloween. It was a costume competition, and I went as Jennifer Grey in Dirty Dancing.
So gay. Right? So good.
It's the
so
same good. Hairstyle.
Did you do anything to your nose?
I did not. I thought that might not be very appropriate.
And that was the right answer.
Gentile.
That was the right answer.
Yes, of course. So Trish is my mom. Trish is my mother.
Biology teacher Trish.
Biology teacher Trish. My mom, you could always tell, she would go up to the neighbors and you would hear her coming home from having two lemon drops. She loved lemon drops. And you would hear her walking down the street and she'd be like, ah! And you'd be like, well, mom's home. She's had lemon drops.
I'm going to say that's two lemon drops this time. Maybe two and a sip.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was a stupid weekend. We were all just acting fools. And I just thought it would be really funny, make everyone laugh, if my mom came out in a muumuu. And then they were like, name her. And I was like, her name's Trish.
Her name is Trish. And we love Trish. And honestly, if I may manifest one day, you and me giggling with you in Trisha's wig, and
yes,
I'll be high as a kite.
Done. I'll see you at the Eagle tonight.
Perfect. A Tuesday night at the Eagle with Trish.
Can you imagine just walking in that fucking wig at the Eagle? I'll take you home.
There's penetrative porn playing on the screens.
Oh yeah.
The camera zooms like, past your curls. Yeah. Your hand raises across. Well, listen, I unfortunately have to end this stunning episode. Jason, thank you for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Where can people follow you?
On the socials, JMS Pinafore. I have a book coming out.
Jason?
I co-wrote a book with Trinity the Tuck.
Are you kidding? Mazel
no,
tov.
No.
That is so
fucking...
Wait, give me the deets. What is this book?
She did a manuscript of a really fucked up version of A Christmas Carol.
Ugh.
And over the summer, her manager is a very dear friend, and he said, we're looking for someone to maybe just help zhuzh a couple corners, round some edges out. And Trinity and I got on so well. I think just the world of her. And she like offered a really lovely credit. I thought I was just gonna like ghostwrite it and call it, but I'm getting credit, baby.
You are getting credit and you deserve the goddamn world. And is there any tea as to when we can expect to see this book into the world?
I think pre-order literally started today.
Oh my God, I cannot
yes,
wait.
Yes, it's called Trinity Ruins Christmas. And it's, yeah, go to her Instagram, go to her website, it's all over.
I'm already a fan of Trinity, but knowing that JMS Pinafore is a part of this journey, hello.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but whatever. She wrote it alongside doing an entire album, and the album is very like, they did all songs that would be in the world of the book. It's like very Jesus Christ Superstar. We're writing the show before we write the show.
Yes, you are.
You know what I mean?
Yes, you are.
And I'm not saying this just because I'm a fan of it, but there is one song in there that I'm like, you have no business being that good.
Really?
That song is really, it's a ballad too.
So it's going to give crossover.
It is great.
It's giving crossover.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can't wait for everyone to hear that.
What?
I think I can say that. Whatever.
I think you can. And if you can't, we love an exclusive. A gay ass. That's a gay ass exclusive. Jason, thank you for coming on. I'll see you at the Eagle, and God bless America.
Oh, God love you and everywhere you know.
Thank you so much for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, there is more at patreon.com/gayasspodcast, where you also will find the full entire Gay Ass Live show with Bowen Yang, Jessica Vosk, Chris Murphy, and more. As always, I'm grateful you're here. I hope you spread the gay ass word, and I'll see you next week.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.